You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. This is a reading of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Eternal and Transient Elements, The Cosmic Past of Humanity and the Mystery of Evil, Collected Works, Volume 184, translated by Anna Moyse. This is Lecture 6. Given on the 15th of September, 1918. Looking at human life in spirit and soul, one cannot use some ideas that are widely accepted, particularly in present-day life and present-day views. One such idea, which is not a good one, concerning human life in spirit and soul, is, for instance, the idea of evolution, the idea that one thing evolves from the other, or rather one state from the other. To avoid misunderstanding, let me stress that I do not say something now about the idea of evolution being of no use. We did make extensive use of it yesterday, for example. But when one is speaking about human life in soul and spirit, and not in soul and body, the idea of evolution serves no purpose. Yesterday we were speaking of life in soul and body, how it progresses from birth to death. There we do need the idea of evolution. The situation is different when we speak of human life in spirit and soul. If one is speaking in accord with reality, concepts or ideas other than evolution will serve. Human life in spirit and soul, the way we know it within the outer reality perceived through the senses, involves thinking, feeling, and doing, or acting out of the will. To understand the course of life in spirit and soul, according to thinking, feeling, and doing as we go through life, we must take note of the following. Living in thinking, feeling, and doing, that is, in feeling something and what has been felt coming to expression in thought, or perceiving something in the outside world, which, then, comes to expression in thought, or doing something, letting will become deed, thus going through life in spirit and soul, the relations must always be considered, which exist between spiritual entities. Wanting to describe the element of spirit and soul within which human beings exist with their soul, we must not shy away from speaking of connections that exist between entities of spirit and soul. Let us assume, for instance, that someone is more of a thinker. While the activities of thinking, feeling, and doing are never completely separate in real life, so if someone is a thinker and forms ideas, the will is involved in the thinking. The will is involved in the process of thinking. And also, when we will, when we do something, thought is involved in what has been willed and done. The situation is that people are sometimes more thinking and less doing when they think, when they reflect, or they are more doing and less thinking and taking action, or also when they give themselves up to some feeling they experience. But talking about it the way I have just been doing is merely a very superficial characterization. One has to use a very different approach if one wants to come to the reality of these things. One must then, for instance, consider this. I am perceiving something or other in the outside world. This encourages me to form ideas about it. I am not taking action. My will intent is limited to directing my bodily nature toward the outside world and perceiving that world, letting thoughts follow one another. My activity is more reflective, perceptive. And in reality, this means that I enter into a spiritual region where certain spirits have the upper hand, which incline more toward the Aramanic nature. Figuratively speaking, I am sticking my head into a region where spirits who are more of an Aramanic nature have the upper hand. Instead of saying, and this is merely in accord with seeming reality, quote, I am reflecting on something, close quote, I would have to say, in speaking the truth, quote, I am active in a spiritual region where spirits have the upper hand over other spirits, damping them down, as it were. And in thus having the upper hand, keeping those in balance which are more inclined toward Ahramanic nature. Close quote. When one says something like this, it does not at first sound vague, indefinite. Let me read that again. When one says something like this, it does at first sound vague, indefinite. But one cannot put it in any other way but the way they are in the spiritual region. Our language has been created for the sense-perceptible world. It is, however, possible to present such things in images by taking the process out of the human being, as it were, and moving it more into the cosmic sphere. For initiates, the fact which one characterizes in outward terms by saying, quote, I am reflecting on something which has stimulated me, close quote, is figuratively expressed more or less as follows. Human beings live cosmically within the cosmos. I have spoken these days of the compass needle which cosmically points north and south and does not determine its direction from within. Human beings are oriented within the cosmos. They live in such a way that we are, in one way, considering their orientation by saying, quote, cosmically they are oriented in such a way that their orientation may change and swing to and fro among different signs of the zodiac. And there's a figure. The orientation changes going toward ram, bull, twins, crab, lion, virgin, scales, scorpion, archer, goat, water carrier, fishes. Their orientation is also such that initially there is a main direction, so that if we base this on the zodiac, the head is oriented upward, the extremities downward. We may say, therefore, there is something like a balance beam in this orientation, separating the upper from the lower. What would the cosmic orientation of the human being be if we were to look at him in a way in which I would not wish you to be now, so that he neither thinks nor acts, but simply gives himself up to his general feeling of life, half asleep and half awake, not being passive nor active, but passively active, slouching along in life? A lot will then also be going on inside him, but he won't be aware of this. If we wanted to characterize this condition, as I said, I would not want you to be in it now, we would say that the beam is horizontal. But if he were in the kind of state of soul in which I'd hope you to be, reflective, stimulated, and taking in the things that are said, the beam would have to be in a different position. And we'd have to say, quote, all the souls sitting in this room, or at least a number of them, enter into a region where certain spirits raise the beam on one side. Close quote. In physical life, if there were excess weight moving the beam, we'd say the beam is going down. But we are now speaking of the spiritual. There we have to say that the beam is rising. When someone is reflective, certain spirits in the region which he then enters raise the beam from scales to virgin. I then have to draw the beam so that certain spirits, which incline toward Ahramanic nature, raise it like this. So that would be the human being musing, reflecting, beam extending from virgin to fishes in the diagram. We may ask, therefore, quote, what does it mean when a human being is reflecting? Close quote. It means that he uses his position as a human being in the whole cosmos in such a way that he uses the powers in which he swings to and fro to enter into a cosmic region where this state of balance prevails. So, you think yourself in a reflective state. Thinking yourself in that state, you have to think to yourself that your, if I may now put it like this, spiritual space, into which you then enter, is within a region where a struggle that has come to rest is taking place. The spirits here on the left would fight those on the right, and vice versa. But the struggle is not actually going on when you are in a reflective state. It has come to rest. This means, however, that certain spirits with Ahrimanic tendencies have the upper hand. When a beam is at rest, though at an angle, and is no longer swinging to and fro, something is dragging it down. That would be the real situation which corresponds to reflection, to thinking activity. Thinking, as we call it in ordinary existence, based on the senses, is merely maya, an illusion. You have to describe real thinking cosmically, by asking about the whole position of the human being within the cosmos. This position of the human being in the cosmos that gives you answers as to what certain spirits in the spiritual world are doing will also answer and tell you what thinking activity, reflection, truly is. Essentially, therefore, the way we speak of thinking in ordinary life is an illusion. To describe it in a way that is in accord with reality, we'd have to say, quote, we are in a region where thoughts arise in our thinking space because certain spirits inclined toward the Ahrimanic have raised the scale on one side, close quote. That is the actual thing which happens. Let us consider another thing that happens in the human soul and spirit. It is that we act, but not wildly so, that our actions are full of intent, of thoughts. The way one thinks of this in ordinary life, describes it in ordinary life, is again mere illusion. For when we do things, act, we also enter into a certain cosmic region. But now the situation is that certain spirits which incline toward luciferic nature make the scale rise in the opposite sense, so that we must now draw the beam like this. Again, reference to the diagram, figure 5. The arrow would indicate the direction in which those spirits lift the beam from its resting position. Acting out of the will, with real intent, we are oriented in a region of the cosmos where the beam is held like that by luciferic spirits. This had been preceded by rest, and as soon as we enter into the region of doing, of acting, the luciferic spirits begin to make the beam tremble. We then enter into a kind of struggle which is taking place in the cosmos. The luciferic spirits begin to fight Ahrimanic spirits, and the unstable position, with the beam shifting, reflects the struggle which is truly taking place between Ahrimanic and luciferic spirits in our act, in our will to act. So, the will to act we speak of in our ordinary speech and define with our ordinary ideas is mere maya, illusion. We talk of the will to act in the right way when we say, quote, when we act out of the will, we are in a region where the world balance beam has been raised, going from bull to scorpion. This did, however, happen without us. We enter into a region where the beam has been raised without us. So we go into exactly the kind of region where rest begins to change into movement, begins to change into rhythmic play. In the first of our mystery plays, I indicated something of this nature. It did, of course, have to be indicated in dramatic form, that we must not imagine that something happens merely in the human being who thinks or feels something in soul and spirit. No, cosmic powers are set in motion. The way it is presented on the stage is that great cosmic events take place whilst Capacius and Strader behave in a particular way. They really do, not in the sense perceptible, but in the super-sensible world. In the sense perceptible world, one can only present these things to the senses the way they have been presented in the play. It is, however, stated quite clearly in the play that the way people behave here, as we describe it, is really only a reflection of something real. Significant events take place in the cosmos when a human being wills or thinks even the least thing in his soul. We can never will or think something inwardly without entering into regions where spiritual struggles take place, or spiritual struggles come to rest, or spiritual battles have already been fought as we enter into the outcome of the struggle. And so on. What I have just been describing is part of human soul and spirit nature. It is, however, hidden from the life which people live between birth and death. But in the spiritual sphere, it is the truth. In a different context, I did say that these days, in relating to the world in an intellectualistic way, as is the custom in the world, human beings are actually living in hallucinations. Basically, the ideas we have of our thinking, feeling, and doing are hallucinations. And the reality behind it is the way we are able to show it on the stage in this way. It is the things I have just been describing which really are behind anything that goes on in our mind and soul. Reflections are revealed to human beings which to them seem to be thinking, feeling, and acting out of the will. As soon as we look at human beings as they truly are in spirit and soul, the concept of evolution no longer applies. It would be complete nonsense to say that human beings only grow reflective at a particular age and are given up to a raging will nature before that, and that the one evolves from the other. Nothing evolves like this in the region of the spirit. All we can say when we see that a child has different ideas, feeling, and will than does an old person is that the child enters into a different spiritual region where the struggles between the different spirits take a different form. You do not get the kind of development or evolution in the spiritual region of which we spoke yesterday. In this spiritual region, we only understand things past. If we say that the picture of the struggle, of the relationship, of the changing relations between the spirits whom we seek behind the higher hierarchies is different from the picture we have in the interactions of the hierarchies when speaking of the present, yet another picture results when we speak of the future. We see different pictures of the relationship between the different spirits in the hierarchies, depending on whether we are considering past, present, or future. And it would be very wrong to say that the picture of the struggle of the future evolves from that of the struggle in the past. In the spiritual region, these things are, in a certain respect, side by side, not one after the other. Because of this, one cannot speak of evolution, but only of a spiritual perspective, something I did already refer to in another context. We may say, therefore, that when we consider the human being in spirit and soul, it is pointless to say that he is first a child, goes through second dentition, that he then reaches sexual maturity, and so on. The development seen in body and soul is bound up with a spirit and soul principle, where one cannot speak of evolution, but only of transitions in the interrelations between the spirits of the higher hierarchies, moving from one picture to another. You cannot gain a real insight into the relationship between the temporal and the eternal unless you consider what I said in my lectures yesterday and today. Yesterday I showed how human beings, as entities in body and soul, are within the evolution of time in such a way that they will indeed have to be old before understanding what has been happening within them as children. There we are fully concerned with development or evolution. We have to acknowledge, however, that in spirit and soul, human beings are not at all in a process of evolution, that the concept of time, in the form in which we know it in the life perceived through the senses, does not apply at all when we speak of human nature in spirit and soul, that we are wrong in applying the concept of time to the sphere of the higher hierarchies. There, everything is eternal. Things do not proceed in time there. But we are dealing with perspectives in which we have to see the struggles and changing relationships. The concept of time does not apply to the changing relationships in the higher hierarchies. We are merely presenting the nature of the higher hierarchies figuratively in using the time concept. Because of this, you can see in my title, Occult Science, how careful I have been in indicating that things do, of course, have to be presented in time, in the images given, especially where I was referring to the Saturn and Sun periods, where it has been described like that, But I did distinctly say that the time concept is only applied figuratively to anything preceding the sun period and half the actual sun period as well. You can read it up in my Occult Science. Those comments of seemingly secondary significance in the book, based on the science of the spirit, are of the greatest importance, for they provide the basis for understanding the difference between things temporal and transient and things eternal that go on forever. If you consider what I have just been saying, you will be able to say that yesterday I attempted to describe essential human nature for you purely in time. The concept of time played a quite considerable role in what I said yesterday, the role being that it does depend on time if one has a certain ability to understand, speaking of the time one has lived through before reaching old age, or time not yet lived through, in which case one is still a child. Everything we discussed yesterday was strictly based on the concept of time. We described what, in the light of spiritual science, is the basis of essential human nature in body and soul. Today I have been speaking of the things that are the basis for the human being in soul and spirit. This can only be spoken of by going into the region of eternity. Describing it in such a way, and this is difficult to do, that the concept of time does not apply in this region, in which we are as human beings in spirit and soul. So in this respect, we truly are discordant creatures. As we develop through life, we know that we must calmly and patiently wait until our bodily and soul nature is mature enough to understand things. On the other hand, we are, all the time, in the region of eternity, where we do not develop, and as it were, look just once, in childhood, at one location in the region of eternity, and, in advanced old age, at another location. Here on earth, human beings live in such a way that the things that happen in the region of eternity are radiating down into the things that happen in time, and the two mingle. In the knowledge gained by the initiates, things that mingle must be kept apart, for they can only be understood if held apart. In that science, the things that are in the region of eternity have always been called the upper ones, those in the region of transience the lower ones. Living here on earth, human beings are, from this point of view, a mixture of upper and lower, and will never gain any kind of insight into essential human nature by looking at the mixture. They will only gain insight if they know how to keep the things that mingle apart. So you will find it understandable that when it comes to the aspect which life on earth offers, you cannot in your normal state of conscious awareness establish that things are the way I did say today. Someone who wants to base himself only on the ordinary conscious mind may say, quote, "Yesterday you told us something about the human being which we cannot see, which is not anything real at all, for human beings do not develop in the way you described yesterday. Some are very mature when young," close quote, and so on. This objection is, however, raised from the illusory point of view. Reality is as I have described it yesterday and today. People fall into dualism today because they do not see the lower principle being as fluid as I have presented it yesterday. The initiate must free the lower principle from its rigidity and make it flow. In ordinary life, people look at someone who is before them. The initiate must consider the process which takes place between birth and death. He must see the human being in a state of flux. Then, again, as the initiate considers thinking, feeling, and doing, which is in a state of flux, he has to stop the flow and look at the aspect which is bound to the body and therefore appears to proceed in time in the region of eternity. The region where things are side by side, but spiritually side by side. People strive for the knowledge of the initiates and are happy to admit also in outward terms that the environment we observe, the environment evident to the senses, is Maya, a great illusion. But when things get serious, they prefer not to consider this, but seek to stay with Maya in describing both the upper and the lower region. Nice diagrams are called for that follow the pattern of Maya concepts and go up into the spiritual world with them or move down above or below the conscious mind. People say, quote, well, you don't describe things so that I can understand them, close quote. But all there is behind this is this, quote, you are asking me to arrive at different ideas than the ones that exist in Maya. You ask me to arrive at ideas that are in the region of reality, close quote. Another objection may be, quote, what does it matter to me what goes on in the lower part? One will also manage quite well by just applying the concept of time in earnest to human evolution, or by looking at the region of eternity in life, close quote. People might say this if they stay in Maya, if they develop ideas that come from the mixture and do not go beyond Maya. Well, you can just about be able to live in a sleep state if you stay in the region of eternity. In the first place, however, any concepts or ideas you produce here, however great the acuity, however much they could hold their own among today's scholars, will only allow you to just about live, but you cannot die with them. No one can die with the concepts produced here. And this is the point. As soon as one touches on this secret, where spiritual insight gets really serious. Concepts produced without the knowledge which initiates have, these ideas will, after death, take one into a wrong Aramanic region. You will not enter into the region of human principles, a region which you are, in fact, destined to reach, if you are not prepared to develop concepts like those which the knowledge gained by the initiates provides. In earlier times, higher spirits would, in supersensible ways, teach human beings who had atavistic clairvoyance the concepts of initiation. A kind of supersensible teaching existed, essentially until 333 after the mystery on Golgotha, which prepared people not only for life, but also for death. Since then, need has arisen for human beings to make their own efforts to gain insight, and so prepare their soul that it can go through the gate of death in the right way. There is nothing more frivolous than to say about the knowledge of initiates that one might simply wait until one comes to the region after death and see what the situation is. In the science of the initiates, one is told that anyone who waits like that is sinning against life. For you would get a terrible shock if an initiate, this is an impossibility, were to tell you the kind of monstrosity you would be born as if you had that attitude in your life between death and that birth, saying that you'd wait and see till you're born on earth, and then you'd see the creature which lives in the blood, covered in flesh. Yes, there'd be a beneficent influence, but they would not relieve you of the need to prepare for yourself the powers that would save you from being born a monster. Higher spirits will protect you there. This spiritual life between death and rebirth, say the spirits who teach there, exists not only for our region. It exists so that the region of the lower principles be prepared in the right way, so that no monsters arise there, but truly well-formed human beings. But life on earth too exists, not only for the earth. It exists in order that human beings may be able to die in the right, the human way. Human beings must here on earth prepare their lower nature so that they will not enter into an Aramanic region which is unlawful. There are, of course, also lawful Aramanic regions, but this would be an unlawful one that would not be in accord with their human nature. So that is the first thing. The second thing is this. You can, if need be, live as an isolated individual. But in reality, one does not live as a single individual by ignoring the region of eternity. But you cannot live within the human social order. The human social order is guided and led by the spirits in the higher hierarchies. And if you enter into even the most minimal human relationship, our whole life consists in relationships between ourselves and others, and anything you put into this relationship does not come from an awareness of being within the spiritual region, the region of eternity, you will ruin the social contact. You are then having a part in bringing about the catastrophic phenomena of destruction and annihilation around the globe. Social or political views, not coming from the spiritual, are destructive, annihilating. Only a view where one is taking account of the region of eternity will enliven anything evolving in the political, the social, and altogether human community life. That is the great solemn truth, and the knowledge gained by the initiates must make more and more people aware of it. The signs of the times are such today that the time has passed when sublime spirits taught supersensibly, which was the case until 333 AD. Lessons people did not have to attend to consciously, for they were largely given in sleep or in a twilight state. Today human beings have to learn the things they need from other human beings. They must simply put aside the arrogance which makes them say that they can always develop their own opinions. In the region of transience, they need to grasp such things as this. Old people have something to say to the young, which only they can tell them. And if one grasps this, why should one not also grasp that there is knowledge gained by initiates, which one human being learns from another? And this is also a leaven in the social life that must develop in future, that people take in things which they are not able to perceive for themselves at some time or other, now speaking of the region of time, from other people. Yesterday I told you that through evolution in time, the arrangement is that one need not accept things on mere authority, but that in the ideas which arise within one, you can indeed have a kind of conviction welling forth from your own inner life. I emphasized in a number of my books that belief in authority should not flourish in the soil of spiritual science. But one thing must be certain for all who truly base themselves on the science of the Spirit. You are not an initiate by simply being cock on the dung heap and begin to crow about your own convictions at any time in life. You can set up all kinds of programs which you think will rule the world, but never produce a body of knowledge which will truly flow into the life and activities in the world. The knowledge of the initiates will be needed more and more for all life and activity in the world. In earlier times, initiation was like a thinking given to people. As we move toward the future, people must with all their will turn toward the knowledge which comes into the world through initiation. All kinds of wishes, subconscious wishes, will go against this. It is not easy for people to develop the great seriousness needed to enter in the right way into everything that is demanded by everything that has been said. It is really quite difficult to tell people today how much they need to be of goodwill, because they often see this goodwill as a heartless will. Someone who truly enters into the meaning of spiritual science will know that moving toward the future, there is no other way but through the science of the Spirit, through initiation, to create soul substance that can go through the gate of death in the right way and can find its right place in human social life. You can come to live in it, and then the counter thought will come. So a person has entered into this kind of life, and there are others whom he loves for one reason or another, who do not want to know about this great challenge in our time, about turning to spiritual life. He will then wish that these other people shall also be blessed. And it seems heartless when the full truth relating to this is stated. But someone who is of good will in this sphere will know that there is no good will in closing one's eyes and saying, quote, well, they do not want to know about spiritual life, but they can also be blessed without it, close quote. What one has to say is, quote, every effort must be made so that spiritual life may come to the earth, close quote. We must endeavor to be positive and not so much follow thoughts that are so closely bound up with wishes, thinking of the situation of people who do not want to know, but with goodwill give ourselves up to spiritual life in the endeavor to bring this spiritual life into the world and so take humanity into the state of blessedness, if I may use the term, of being in harmony with the spiritual world. Behind the attitude often called loving lies not only superficiality, but also a failure to see things as they truly are. Someone speaking from initiate knowledge today does not do this merely to bring theoretical insight to the human soul, but is speaking from a warm heart, with love for humanity. He knows how much the signs of the times indicate that the great task will be to speak to people of this spiritual life, and to work in such a way in the life of people that this spiritual life will reach the human soul. It will, of course, call for some degree of courage to face up to human evolution in time. The views of the upper and the lower have to be clearly understood, as they have to be today, and as far as possible must also be presented to the human soul. If you look at the whole of life, the way it is looked at in a prejudiced, illusory way today, yes, then you won't talk of the whole of life. You'll really only talk of a very small part of life. I have tested this. I know the existing Goethe biographies, for instance. They do tell us all kinds of things which Goethe has done, thought, and envisaged between his birth and his death. But when this Goethe soul went through the gate of death, everything written from the point of view of today's illusory philosophy of life did not have the least significance for the region into which the human soul enters after death, which represents a different blend between the region of eternity and the region of transience. For this too is transient. The human being will be born into a new existence. For in the region into which human beings enter through the gate of death, we can do nothing with everything known through the illusory philosophy of life, through the illusory biography recording the life between birth and death. There the only question that matters is, quote, how did the soul speak to the cosmos? Close quote. Things a person has told others, even if they have been the most beautiful things here on earth, will not have been spoken to the cosmos unless they have themselves arisen from spiritual insight. The things Goethe had lived through had been spoken to the cosmos, if we look at this life in such a way that we describe the 7-year periods, especially with regard to his life. How much he changed from one 7-year period to another. How remarkable that the great change in his life came within a 7-year period, when he went to Italy, or at least made the decision to go to Italy. The things that happen from one 7-year period to another, under the region which creates the biographies in the ordinary sense, speak into the cosmos. Something can be done with them when the human being has gone through the gate of death. What Goethe said as the spirits from the region of eternity influenced him, which can be described the way in which I have described it today, does in turn relate to the region into which one enters after death. Describe Goethe's life from the point of view which results from the spiritual way of looking at one 7-year period after another. What Goethe felt when he wrote words like, quote, things you wish for in youth are yours in abundance in old age. If you look at Goethe's life from the point of view of transience, and come upon words like these which Goethe wrote as a motto at the beginning of a chapter in his works, quote, things you wish for in youth are yours in abundance in old age. If you come up to such words with spiritual scientific insight, you are, as it were, coming up against the eternal Goethe. And if again in a spiritual scientific mood, you come on something of Goethe's where something coming from the region of eternity enters into his words, from the region where the hierarchies let their interplay proceed, you come on something which is the eternal Goethe. To get to know not only the temporal in the world, but the eternal, which one can only get to know by the roundabout route of spiritual science, is the task set for us when we take up the science of initiation. Things from earlier times must now be seen in the light which can come from the present-day science of initiation. There is something in the Roman Catholic Church which we may compare with the effect which a red rag has on a certain creature. If a Catholic who today is often considering himself to be dyed in the wool could speak up against some kind of philosophy of life, it would be a philosophy of emanation, presenting the world from the emanation point of view. Then this philosophy would be condemned, perhaps less for the man himself, but certainly for the faithful sheep for whom he writes or speaks. All one has to do is to attach the predicate emanating to a philosophy of life. Our staunch Catholic opposes this emanationistic philosophy with the creationistic philosophy, the philosophy of creation from nothing. Now, again, dualism would be used, putting the emanationist philosophy that acts like a red rag on one side, the creationistic philosophy, creation from nothing, on the other side. One adopts the creationistic philosophy and rejects the emanationistic philosophy. Emanationism has specifically come to be known in the Occident by way of Gnosis. The way it has become known in the Occident, the literature on which it is based, has largely been destroyed. This emanationism is already a kind of caricature, and a great misunderstanding arises because essentially only the caricature is known in the Roman Catholic world. For their theory of emanation, with one aeon arising from another, with the less perfect or the less sublime aeon arising from the more perfect aeon, exoterically usually known as Gnosis, has already been corrupted. It goes back to a philosophy of life that was of a completely different nature, one that was still possible in the times when spiritual teachers from the supersensible world taught humanity. Emanationism, which, as I said, has already been corrupted, points back to knowledge which in the old way related to the region of eternity, the upper element. When it comes to this upper element, one can, in a way, defend emanationism, not in its corrupted form, but in the form where only a perspective in time is spoken of and not an actual process of evolution. And as there was no reference to evolution, one also could not speak of something arising out of nothing, for that would be an evolution, even if evolution at a radically extreme point. There one cannot speak of one thing arising from another, but in the way we also did not speak, as we talked about the region of eternity today, of an emanation, an arising, but of changing relationships among the spirits which have the quality of eternity. When we talk about the region of transience, we can certainly speak of evolution, but then also of the extreme case of evolution, of which we have essentially, implicitly, been speaking a great deal these days. Surely it means continuous creation from something which to the world is nothing when we say that the present ideals are the seeds for the future and the present realities are the fruits of the past. Rightly considered, this gives us the true, uncorrupted creationism. The challenge for people today is this: to see what was meant by emanationism in the right light and apply it to the world of spirit and soul. To see what true uncorrupted creationism is in the right light and apply it not to the creators, but to the creation, to the element of body and soul. The salvation, the redemption of the philosophy of life, is to acknowledge the duality, see through it, and not jumble things with dualistic orientation together in a nebulous way. To see the region of eternity in the right way, and also the region of transience, and be able to tell them apart. Then we'll be able to say, quote, "When I look at the reality that lies before me, it is a reflection, and at the same time also a consequence. It is a reflection in that it belongs to the region of transience, and is governed by evolution. A consequence in that it belongs to the region of eternity, and is governed by that which results when we see the things we have today been characterizing for the life in spirit and soul in the right way." Close quote. Someone who puts things in the right way will not say that creationism is right and emanation is wrong, nor that emanation is right and creationism is wrong. He will know that both are necessary factors if we are to grasp life in the full. The overcoming of dualism cannot be done in theory, but only in life itself. Someone who is looking for a way out between the region of the upper and the region of the lower, the region of transience and the region of eternity, and does so in theory, using concepts, ideas, notions, will not succeed. He'll always end up in a confused philosophy, because he is using the intellect to look for something that must be looked for in life. In life, however, one is only looking for the truth if one knows, quote, "You have to turn your attention, on the one hand, to the region of eternity, there to perceive what admittedly does not present itself in external reality, and then also to the region of transience, there to consider all human beings and all creatures in a way which actually contradicts outward reality." Close quote. Equipped with both, the reality you approach, experiencing it in a living way, will come together from the elements which originally gave rise to it. The consequence of the region of eternity and the reflection of the region of transience. This is how we grasp it in life if we do not want to have a theoretical philosophy of life that is all concept and idea, but are ready to have two philosophies, one for the region of spirit and soul, the other for the region of body and soul, and do not want to have a theory for the source that feeds life and makes it fertile, but have the two live together. Then and only then do we escape the dualism. This is the challenge facing humanity today. It is not a matter of having founders of religions appear to teach spiritualism. It is not a question of some founders of scientific sects making their appearance who teach materialism. What matters is that we see matter materially in evolution, the spiritual immaterially, spiritually, in the region of eternity, and see reality in the two coming together. Letting the spirit illumine the material, letting the material harden the spiritual. This is what must become part of the future philosophy of life. There is no need for philosophers who give people definitions of the truth, nor definitions of what science teaches, so that a monistic harmony is established. What matters is that the dualism between truth and science is recognized, looking in a life that is alive to the relationship between truth and knowledge, and so arrive at a living, rather than a theoretical, epistemology. Not truth or knowledge, but both truth and knowledge. The knowledge sustained by the weight of truth, the weight of truth illumined with the light of knowledge. Acknowledging that man is dualistic in the world and can only overcome such dualism as needs to be overcome in his life, in growth and development. It is not Kantianism, the belief that whatever lives in the outside world is not the thing in itself, but truth and knowledge, which future humanity must make its task, also in philosophy, recognizing that everything around us is Maya, but Maya because, as human beings, we take this position in the world, which is dualistic. We create Maya by doing so, and we overcome Maya in life in that we ourselves come alive, and not with theory or notion. That is what I have also written in my title Truth and Science, and my title Philosophy of Spiritual Activity. A new edition of the latter will be available shortly. Readers aside, this is also known in a newer edition called Intuitive Thinking as a Spiritual Path. There's also another title, The Philosophy of Freedom. End of readers aside. I've made some additions. The text has not been changed, but considerably expanded on certain points. It is a question, therefore, of understanding the signs of the times, and on the basis of this, cultivating cultural life in all kinds of fields of human activity. The end of Lecture 6.